Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But, you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, here to meet your urgent and emergent medical needs, whether they are COVID-19 related or not. Medical emergencies happen when you least expect them. Whether it's a stroke, heart attack, illness, or injury, San Juan Regional Medical Center's caregivers are here to provide care to you and your loved ones. Find out more online at sanjuanregional.com. It's 8 o'clock. It is Wednesday morning, the 15th day of September, 2021. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin. Thanks for tuning in to KSJE, 90.9 FM here in San Juan County, New Mexico. Of course, in Durango, Colorado, you can listen to us at 103.3 FM. And everywhere else on the planet Earth, you can tune in to our website, ksje.com, or have your smart speaker do it. You can just ask Alexa or Google to do that, and we'll be on your smart speaker just like that. Welcome also to our viewers who are joining us live this morning. The video stream is going out to the KSJE YouTube channel, our Facebook page, and our Twitter account. We are glad that you are with us this morning as well, everybody, because in the next few minutes, we're going to get an update from the superintendent from the Central Consolidated School District. Superintendent Daniel Benavides is my guest this morning. I'll be talking with him in the next few moments right here on KSJE. Then later on this hour, we'll be checking in with Ron Price, our new segment, Life in the Sandbox. Ron will be here with some more good advice. This week, he is talking about the power of emotions. That's coming up this morning, 8:50 a.m. on KSJE. Next hour, it's our classical music program, Roving with the Arts, with Mick Hess. This morning, Mick is featuring music from the great George Gershwin. That's coming up at 9:06. Special 90-minute version of Roving with the Arts on Wednesdays, of course, because that'll take us to 10:30. And right on Four Corners, our local and regional author program, Tracy Hales-Vass speaks with local and regional authors every Wednesday. And this week, it's Ursula Bevan talking about her children's book, Sunny the Sunflower. Learn more about that coming up today at 10:30 on KSJE. Don't forget, of course, you can connect with us on social media in addition to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Check us out on Instagram as well. And if you're a podcast person, we invite you to subscribe to KSJE's podcasts or wherever you find podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, Google Podcasts, Pandora, Amazon, Podbean, all over the place. So subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, and you can get some local information as well from KSJE. Weather forecast, a sunny morning this morning, 58 degrees in Farmington right now outside our studios here at San Juan College. We are expecting another sunny day today and for the next 10 days. Look at that. Sunshine, 88 for a high today, 53 and clear tonight, 87 for a high tomorrow and on Friday. 51, 53 for an overnight low. Look at that, 89 on Saturday, mid-80s Sunday and Monday. Maybe cooling off a bit next week, Tuesday with a high of 75, 79 on Wednesday, but back into the 80s by the end of next week. And overnight lows, though, getting cooler, too. Look at that, mid-50s for much of the next 5 days, but then upper 40s and lower 40s on Tuesday night. So The weather is changing, that is for sure. Let me introduce my guest who is here with me this morning. I always appreciate his time when he comes over to talk with me to get an update on conditions and things going on in the Central Consolidated School District. Superintendent Daniel Benavides is here. Good morning. Good to have you back.
Good morning, Scott. Nice to be back.
Thanks for coming in. And things are going well. We were talking just about how fast the school year seems to be progressing. Here we are mid-September already, but it's been almost a month of school for your students.
It's been very nice because it seems, with the exception of the COVID stuff, it seems to be a normal year, which is good. And I'm always amazed at how fast time flies. It's September 15th, my goodness sake.
Right, that's true. And so despite all the COVID stuff, you still got kids running through the halls and getting to class, and the bells are ringing, the buses are moving, and all those normal things we associate with schools. Kids are on the athletic fields. It's probably a nice scene.
It's extremely rewarding to see that all the hard work that the staff and the teachers and the parents getting our kids to get back into in-person learning. It's pretty phenomenal. It's just you kind of take that for granted until you have something like this, like the pandemic, come through. And it's nice to be at schools and see kids running around and doing those normal things.
Right. So, kids being kids.
Kids being kids.
And complaining about homework, probably.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's a good thing. And you were telling me even the number of COVID cases has not been too severe in your school district, which is, again, another knock on wood moment.
Right.
But that's good because that means some of the things that you're doing are working.
Yeah, we got to commend the staff in our district. Everybody's pitching in. We do some random checks just to make sure that we're following the protocols, but everybody seems to be wearing their masks. The few cases, I think countywide, they've been averaging in the 40s, if I remember the data correctly from this past week. But in our district, they're relatively small. You know, we have 3 or 4 cases, I think, is the most we've had. But on average, they're pretty low. And what we're finding out is the cases we are getting are coming from the outside, meaning that whoever is bringing it in, it's being isolated because of the mass.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're not having to send whole groups of students out like we were in the past. And it's allowing us to keep kids in school. And that's the most important thing. And I want to commend our entire district community. They're doing an outstanding job of protecting our kids.
Right.
It's awesome.
Well, and it's a great job. And again, it sounds like then the protocols are in place so that if a case does show up,
right,
you can quickly isolate that case or a few cases and not have to close a whole school down or something like that.
Yeah. And again, it goes back to the fact that despite what one may think about the mask, because it's been a touchy subject all over the United States, the fact that...
Really? I hadn't heard a thing about it. There's controversy? Sorry.
No worries. But, the principals have done an outstanding job of just saying, hey, this is what we're going to do. We want kids in school. And it hasn't been an issue. And again, our job is to educate kids. If whatever we can do to get our kids educated, we're going to do. And it's been wonderful to see the staff step up. So.
Right. Well, and I think your district, more than many others across New Mexico and even San Juan County, when we get some of the data by zip code of vaccination rates, your district is probably one of the highest vaccinated school districts in the state, if I...
Yeah,
I haven't
recently checked up on our vaccination. I know that people are excited about... excited as you can get about getting inoculated.
Right, I've understood, sure.
But
even your families.
Right.
And even the folks that are eligible to get the vaccine have gotten it of those western San Juan County zip codes.
Right, and what that does is allows us to have more of those shot clinics. Hmm. We are planning on having a booster clinic when it's available in a week and a half or 2 weeks.
Sure.
We've opened that up, and I think... I think that they're realizing that this isn't going away. We got to do what we got to do to protect our kids. But you're right. The Western County of San Juan County has done a phenomenal job. Navajo Nation, got to give kudos
right
to Navajo Nation.
Yes, definitely.
They've gotten some really good numbers up in inoculation, and so it's good. It helps. Anything that we can do to, again, education shouldn't be political. we're here to educate kids, and that's our goal, and everybody's pitching in.
Right. Well, good to see. And again, as you've described, those scenes of normalcy of kids in school and on the buses and on the athletic fields,
right.
Again, I mean, we took it for granted, and then when we didn't have it, we want it back, and here it is. So we want to keep it that way.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I want to stress today is that, you know, it's important to get kids out there. We're here for academics, but remember, a lot of kids go to school because they want to participate in something. They want to be a part of something, and athletics is one of those activities. And we're very fortunate right now that we can have in person volleyball or in person football. Even though we may have to wear the mask, I said it's really important that kids have that outlet. I think we got to see students, and the community got to see students when they're kept up or they're bottled up at home. It's not a good situation because they're young, they want to get out there. And so having sports and activities is important. So people, I hope the community understands that we want to be able to play Farmington or Bloomfield or Aztec or Gadsden or wherever we're playing. We want to continue to do that. So people help us out there with keeping our kids safe.
There you go. Very true. My guest this morning, Central Consolidated Schools Superintendent Dr. Daniel Benavides is here, and we're talking a little bit about some of the conditions going on in the district these days, of course, with some of the mask requirements and being able to get kids back in school and in-person learning, which is what everyone wanted over the past 18 months or so. You were talking before we came on the air a little bit about enrollment and census count and things along that line. That 40th day is coming up soon. So how are things looking?
Great question. I think that we're pretty excited. Our numbers, I always, as a superintendent, you don't ever want to overproject your numbers because that affects your budget. So we're a little conservative as
sure.
far as our numbers. So we went with last year's, and they were low because of COVID and some other things with some of the someone generating and jobs in the area. But right now, knock on wood again, our numbers seem to be up in all our sites. And so we're hoping
every school.
Okay. And that's one or two or five or six. And it's the old adage or the old saying, you know, pennies add up to dollars and dollars make sense. It's the same kind of with school districts, that every student that we get increases our budget. So we're hoping that our kids continue to come back, trust what we're doing, get educated in person, and that way 40th day count, we'll have good numbers for that, so we have a good budget. So.
And that number, just for folks who don't follow this as much as you and I do,
right.
is important because that's what the state uses, or
one
of the measuring days that they use to determine your funding for the next year.
Exactly, and that's important because it gets averaged with the 80th day that happens in December. They take that average and they give you your budget. That'll be your budget for next year. So it's really, really exciting that our kids are coming back. And I want to give the shout out to the parents that are trusting that we're doing the right things to keep kids safe. But I also want to encourage parents that, if they have any doubt about sending their kids, come check us out. Come to the schools. We'll give you a visitor pass. We'll walk you through the protocols. We'll make sure that they understand that we're going to keep kids safe. And again, it's about getting kids educated.
Right, right. You talked earlier a little bit about, you know, keeping kids in school, doing it safely, you know, talking about some of the things that Central Schools have done to identify quickly if someone has a positive case of COVID-19 and isolating that person or sending them home or whatever the case may be. And so as we move forward during the school year, it seems to me that the state is going, and I'm going to put myself out there, and if I'm wrong, you can say I told you so, Micklin, but that the state is trying really hard to keep schools open and to keep kids going back for face-to-face and really trying hard to not have to shut things down again and even other businesses shut down. I mean, we're seeing cases, but we're not seeing the shutdowns because I think, as you mentioned, we're learning to live with this and have to learn to live with this going forward.
Absolutely. That's a great point. I think that businesses are adjusting, as hard as it is to adjust to the mass and other things, they're adjusting. But I know that the Public Education Department has made it very clear that their expectation is to keep kids in school. And so they've changed their protocols. They've kind of have some data for the last year to keep kids in school. And so that's our expectation at CCSD. We want to keep kids in person. Now there are a few kids that want to take advantage of the virtual that we're offering, and I think that's statewide. But in general, the data does show that kids in person are going to get that what they need, and so the state has made it very clear. That's not to say that they won't change their mind.
That's right.
But
as of today,
they want kids to be in person. So right. we hope that continues to be the mantra. So.
Right. But that seems to be the message you're getting,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely.
And as I said, I think, you know, we're seeing some of this guidance coming out to say, let's do everything we can,
yep,
before we have to shut down again.
Absolutely.
And that's really the most distant last resort.
Last resort,
I think, is what
knock on wood.
Yes, exactly. As an educator, someone who's been in the business for a number of years, I want to ask you a bit about kind of the lost learning concept and the concern that maybe kids last year, it was rough for everybody. I certainly understand that. And that kids maybe this year are playing a little bit of catch up, and then they're going to be introduced to some new concepts so they can kind of move forward. Is that what you're seeing? I know it's still early maybe to talk about assessments and things like that, but is that what your teachers are trying to do with kids to see where they are and how to get them going again?
Yeah, let me give a shout out to our staff because they've had to adjust. We've had to put in some, we have to, this public education department requires that we make up the loss of learning. How we do that is up to the district. And so we've put in a little bit extra time during the day, and we've worked a little bit longer. And so we got to give shout out to the principals and to the staff and the people at the sites, because they're adjusting, and our kids are adjusting to a little bit longer days because we have to make up that loss of learning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could be a little controversial because how you make that up is debatable. But what we've tried to do is try to minimize that by keeping the year kind of the same.
Right.
We did increase some of the time during the day, so it's longer, and teachers and students have to adjust to that, so they're a little bit more tired. But I think that staff and students are resilient, and so that's how we're addressing that loss of learning. I'm not sure until probably the end of the year where we've got all our short cycle assessments looked at and some of the data that we have for testing comes into play, whether we've closed that gap or not.
It's, you mean end of the school year, end of the calendar year?
End of the school year,
okay.
Meaning in May.
Okay.
Once we look at all that data and we get those test results back.
But will there be anything you can see maybe mid-year?
Yeah, we have our short cycle.
That would maybe help to maybe, if you needed to kind of do another boost for the second half of the year?
Yeah, our short cycle assessments are, we have them and we're going to be using them, and we can look at those type of things.
Right.
But we are really relying on teachers knowing their kids and adjusting and scaffolding and trying to make sure that they meet the needs of the student individually. There are some kids that did really well online. A lot
True.
Of kids didn't.
Right.
And so they've got to be able to understand and adjust their teaching, that it's not the traditional where we teach everything the same to everybody. They're going to have to scaffold and make sure that they adjust their learning. And I think we have the staff that's able to do that. It's an adjustment for them.
Sure.
Because of what you said, the loss of learning. It's required that we do that. Overall,
well, what teacher's been through a worldwide pandemic, right? Even some teachers have been around for a long time. They're not over 100. They're not around in 1918. So
right.
This is all new for everybody.
It's all new for everybody. And I am concerned how it's going to look at the end of the year. And so time will tell on that. But we're trying our best to put those things in place to try to make that up. I'm not sure. We haven't got any kind of hint or indication from PED if we're going to have to do that next year. I'm hoping they leave it up to the local districts to make that decision, that they don't take that out of our hands, so we can run summer programs and maybe adjust that during the so we can have a normal type of school here next year. But the jury's still out on that one.
Sure.
For this year.
Well,
so.
It's still kind of early. I understand that. And then I guess maybe at home, is there any advice you have maybe for parents or grandparents maybe when the kids get home and they maybe have more homework than usual or maybe than they've had previous years because they're catching up and trying to do some of that stuff? How can parents and grandparents and others help?
Great ask. If there's one thing that parents or grandparents or guardians can do with their students, read with them. if they simply read with them for 15, 20 minutes, read to them or have the student read to the adult, I'm telling you that's going to make a world difference. It's 20 minutes. They can read while they have dinner together, or, you know, during commercial breaks, the 5 minutes that they're watching TV, they can read a paragraph and then watch the show and read a paragraph. Think outside the box and help your student out. That's the one piece of advice. So thanks for that, asking that. And,
sure.
I hope parents at least read with them. It makes a difference.
Right, right. And what about for older kids? Same advice? Or, I mean, is there anything different you'd say maybe for your high school kids that are just maybe trying to get through
yeah,
it, you know, get to graduation?
Another good question. I think that if parents ask their kids to get off their devices for 15 minutes and have a conversation with them, they don't have to be superficial and say, "Hey, son, how was your day?" You know, just say, "Hey, how's it going?" Just an open-ended question, and have them talk about what's going on, and literally kind of time it so they understand that 15 minutes is important for adult interaction. And
mom and dad should be off their devices too during that,
right?
15 minutes, right?
Right. Sometimes I worry that they're on their devices more than the kids nowadays.
Right.
So.
Right.
I see that all the time in restaurants.
Yeah, sure. But important to connect, I guess.
It's important to connect.
From time to time, right?
The time that the students and parents were bottled up, I think that they need to go outside while the weather's nice. As you mentioned earlier, we're going to have mid-90s and upper 80s.
Yeah.
Go outside and have a conversation and cook on the grill and just have a conversation with your teenager. I think that'll work wonders.
That's important. I think that's good advice even when there's not a pandemic going
right.
on for parents and
right.
kids to connect or adults or whoever that child has in their life to connect with them and
Absolutely.
See, just ask how it's going.
Interaction with that, you establish that rapport with your students, and it doesn't have to be about school. It could be about baseball or basketball or, you know what, even if there's something on Instagram that they might see that they could do together, that's something they could talk, but away from the device. I think that's important.
Very true. Very true. We talked a little bit about sports earlier, and that's a great outlet. Again, glad to see the kids and the kids' students back on the fields and courts and all that. Didn't want to leave out, though, the other maybe non-athletic students, maybe like for the choir kids,
right.
the band kids, and all the other extracurricular activities. Some of those are ramping back up, too, after this?
Absolutely.
Right?
There's a little bit, some requirements for the band.
Sure.
Because of the air and that kind of stuff. So, but I'm excited because, you know, I'll be able to go to the PAC centers that we have in our district and hopefully get to see some plays and some concerts. But that's important because not every kid is geared towards athletics. They're geared toward the arts and other things. And so we're really excited about them coming back online. So
great. So those things are starting
coming
back up
yep,
as well, which yep. is
really
great.
Exciting.
That's good to know. Talk to me a little bit about maybe looking ahead to the school year, the legislative sessions coming back. We talked a little bit before we came on the air about the state maybe seeing more revenue coming in. Thank you, oil and gas industry and
right.
Other sources as well. But it looks like the state legislature may have some more dollars to divvy up in the legislative session. Of course, education is a big chunk of the state budget.
Yeah, it's exciting, but it's also some being cautiously optimistic. The revenues right now, attended an LSC meeting a couple of weeks ago, and the projections are still high for that. My worry is that we don't spend it to catch up. And we talked about lost learning, but I'm hoping that the legislature understands that every district is different. Every district has different needs. One size doesn't fit all. It shouldn't be, if we're going to give you money, it applies this way. They should take into consideration how it's district should make that decision. Put some parameters, of course, because it's public money, it's taxpayer money. But give the flexibility to the district to come up with a plan to spend that money to help kids. That's what's exciting about getting this money. It's not going to be, in my experience in education, sometimes you get a windfall and you get some money, and then other years it's lean where they're worried they're going to sweep your cash balances. So,
well, we've seen that too.
So we've got to be good stewards of the money. And so that's exciting. And again, I hope that the legislature understands, whether you're left or right, all districts are individuals and they have different needs, and one size doesn't fit all, and so that's important to pass on.
Right, right. And it seems like sometimes we see with some of these new funds of money or things that are available that the state will say, all right, we're going to have this new program and you all have to apply. And then we'll review the applications. It's more of a competitive situation. It's not going out to every district in the state. It's going to be an application process. And so I would think that that puts smaller districts at a bit of a disadvantage who maybe don't have full-time grant writers and things like that available to do some of these things, or at least to apply all the time.
Yeah, that's a concern. When this money comes through, if it's below the line, meaning that it's not given as part of your budget and you have to apply for it, it does put some of those districts at a disadvantage. But what I would hope is that I would rather see the state give money to five districts and pilot that program, okay, and then get some good data on it instead of trying to give everybody a piece of the pie where they can't do much with it, okay? Give five districts from all, whether it's the Mosqueros of the world up in the Northeast or the Lordsburgs down Southwest or Hobbs or Central or whoever it is, but give a different district sizes
sure
money to pilot the program, get that data and say, did this work? And once they have that money, then if it works, then give it to everybody and fund it adequately. I think the legislature does a good job of trying to make sure that it's equitable and giving everybody equal amounts of money, but equitable and equal aren't the same thing. And a district our size might be able to implement something at a different level than a Wagon Mound or a Roy, just because of their size.
Sure.
So I really like the fact that the legislature does a good job of trying to make everybody, or not make, but give everybody the same amount of money. But the same amount of money in one district doesn't give you the same services, if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah,
and I think it makes sense to our audiences as
I
well.
I hope so.
But
I'm stuttering a little bit.
Today. I hear what you're saying. Well, and it is true. I mean, we have such a diverse state and such a wide difference in school districts, as you talk about.
Right.
I mean, Central is one of the larger geographically school districts in our state. So you have needs and expenses that other districts don't have, and
right.
Then you talked about Wagon Mound and Roy and. You know, those are pretty small districts,
right.
And I would assume that, you know, they don't have a lot of other needs because they don't have a big staff like you do.
Right. And so it's important, and legislators...
Or I shouldn't say other needs, distinct needs, different needs.
Distinct needs is a
better I don't want the cards and letters, so I understand
right.
what you're saying, yes.
But I hope that the legislators listening out there understand that sometimes it might be better, as a suggestion, that you pilot the program for a couple of years and get that data and target that money so somebody can give you good data so you can make a good decision so we can be good stewards of the money. I know from my experience sometimes when they give $5,000 as an example, totally an example, let's say they give $5,000 to each district to run a program, $5,000 is really a lot of money in a Roy, but it's not a lot of money in a district our size.
Right.
So the opposite happens. So,
well, if I'm Roy and I have five schools as opposed to Central Consolidated with how many schools?
Well, we have 17 total.
17 for $5,000.
Yeah.
Different situation.
So I caution with the use of this money is that they listen to the superintendents and understand that we, 89 of us, and then the charter school directors or head of schools or whatever they are, whatever their designation are, that they take our input, because it's important. I think we kind of know what we're doing at the district level, and we don't know have all the answers, but when it comes to running school districts, superintendents have some really good ideas, and there's a lot of good ideas out there. I just hope that they use those ideas to make sure that this money is spent and used to improve student achievement.
Gotcha. Well, I'm sure your phone's going to be ringing. I'm sure folks will be asking what you think. As you mentioned, you've been to a couple of meetings already, and I assume that will continue.
Yeah, it'll
continue. So that's important. But we hear a lot about local control and wanting local school boards to have some of that input and get some information back from the superintendents. And you're getting information from your principals, who are hopefully getting information from their teachers. And
right.
That's how it's supposed to work, isn't it?
Yeah, it's supposed to work that way. You bring up local control. So one of the things that is hard right now, because our local boards are elected by their constituency. And so sometimes decisions at the state level, which are intended to be well-intentioned,
right.
Sometimes aren't taking into consideration what a district is like. And so I worry that the local control could be an issue when school boards are elected to make those decisions. They create policy that are accountable, they're held accountable for. And so I just hope that we get to make more local decisions. That's just my humble opinion. It's not political. I just want our district to be able to make local decisions to the best that we can. There's some things that are out of control, but I would hope that that becomes a little bit more available to us.
Gotcha. Well, and it sounds like that could be maybe something the legislature could talk about.
They could talk about it. It's hard because, again, remember, right, local boards are elected.
Sure.
Just like they're elected. So I think the legislators might look at that and say, well, we don't want anybody telling us what to do either. And I hope they would remember that when they're thinking about local school boards.
Sure. So. But in regulating the PED, perhaps, that's
possibly
something the legislature could,
absolutely,
could do. But
possibly. And you got to be careful, too, because you don't want to over-regulate PED,
no,
as well.
Right.
I just think there needs to be a balance. And historically, off and on, sometimes you get input as a district and sometimes you don't. It's decisions are made without input. Overall, I think there needs to be a balance. And balance seems to be a big word in our district because we're having to balance a lot of different things. And so it doesn't hurt to ask or get,
sure,
input.
Well, that sounds like a good idea. And we have a new leader of the PED in New Mexico, so,
mm-hmm,
perhaps we can talk to him someday and see what,
yeah,
he thinks about all this.
I've known Kurt for
former
a while.
Superintendent.
Yeah, he's a former superintendent. I actually, he was at Public Education Department when I was there. He was a deputy secretary then when I was in the Title I unit. And we interacted, and I knew him as a superintendent. And I think that him being there, having been a superintendent, is a good thing.
Would he understand maybe some of these things you're talking about?
He understands the local control issue and that every district is different.
Mm-hmm.
The issues that they have in Hobbs are different than CCSD, and the issues they have in Clayton are different than the ones at Silver.
Right.
I think that's good. So we'll see how it turns out. I hope it gets confirmed, but it'll be nice to be able to talk to him. He is down to earth, and I think that was a solid, safe move.
Good. Well, very good. Well, Mr. Benavides, always great to visit with you.
Likewise.
Thank you for coming in. Always appreciate it. We'll see you again in about another month. And
sounds good.
See how things are going. But thanks for the update.
Likewise, and take care, Scott, and everybody be safe and well.
Thank you. You too. Very good. That is Superintendent Dr. Daniel Benavides, Superintendent of Schools of the Central Consolidated School District, my guest here on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.